It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
It's great to finally be back, Cheddar. I think it was 7 months ago in our last hurling show, we were warning people to follow public health advice and not to be going crazy. Little did we know then that instead of being 2 or 3 weeks of a lockdown, Cheddar, we're back 7 months later, back in another one.
God, it's hard to believe that it's not that long ago since we were talking hurling, Woolly.
Yeah.
And I suppose looking at a huge amount of things that have happened in the meantime, some of them not good for society and so on. But look, I suppose it's great that the inter-county championship is starting up again, all the people are looking forward to it. You know, obviously there's risks to it, but I think it's just great that it is starting up. And, you know, please God, it will run through to the final in December. And please God, we'll have a great championship. And look, we've a little bit of, I suppose, a little bit of evidence here of this working, Woolly, because there's been some fantastic club championships around the country in the last couple of weeks. And there's no reason why the inter-county championship cannot take place now in a safe environment, and that it finishes, and that we have a very, very, very good championship. I think we're all looking forward to it.
Yeah, we definitely are. Just actually, before we're starting to record, I saw a tweet from John Fogarty, and because I have the football show already done, and he's tweeting that the GPA are demanding that that all squads are tested for COVID, or the season will need to be reconsidered.
Oh, I agree with that. I think, you know, God, isn't it not a little bit late in the day to be talking about these things when everybody
Knew
these a number of weeks ago? And I'm really surprised at this, and a little bit surprised. I'd be very, very much a players-oriented person. But, you know, is this flexing your muscles or what? I don't know. I mean, everybody knew about this a number of weeks ago. Why wasn't it discussed then? And first of all, why not discuss it and talk to the GA and talk to the medical people in the GA? Because I can tell you one thing, I felt more safe in the last number of weeks in the club championships, you know, dealing with club doctors and all of that, than certainly I would be dealing with GPA or anybody else, I can tell you. So I'm just surprised at this. First of all, from two parts, I suppose, we knew about this a while ago. Why wasn't it raised at that stage when we were talking about drawing up the championships? And second of all, you know, is this based on medical advice? And what is the medical advice? And does that medical advice conflict with GA medical advice and HSE medical advice? And if it does, then it needs to get discussed. If it doesn't, then let's sort this out.
Yeah, exactly. For my understanding, it completely goes against public health advice, because teammates are casual contacts, and training is completely geared towards keeping them as casual contacts, in that they drive to training on their own. They're not close enough to each other. Team meetings, dressing rooms are all out of the question. So And at intercounty level, they have two dressing rooms, so everybody's spaced out, no huddles. So as long as they're casual contacts, I can understand everybody getting tested if they were close contacts, you know, like the Premier League players are, who are cocooning away together. That's not what the GAA has done. So it's definitely a strange one on the GPA that just caught my eye. So I thought it would be strange not to have brought it up.
I'll finish on that point, Uli. Look, we're not medical people here, so we cannot judge these things. And to be honest with you, there's a lot of confusion around the place from some medical people. But my understanding of it is that testing doesn't serve a huge amount of purpose. That level of testing doesn't, and waste, and I think that person is right, would waste an awful lot of resources that might be actually pointed elsewhere.
Yeah.
What I would fully agree if the GPA were to get in behind is, are there additional measures we can put in place to protect everybody? And it's not just necessarily the players. There's an awful lot of people involved that are going to be in Croke Park next Saturday night that are not players. And we have a duty of care to everybody here, not just necessarily the players. And I think if there was additional measures to be put in place, you know, whatever that is, let's go to whatever that is. From my discussions with medical people on this earlier on in the year, they're the most important things that can protect everybody. And, you know, if there was something on that line, I'd be fully supportive of it. And I'd say, stop. If there's a concern about this and that we can do more and that we're not doing it, then stop until we figure out what this is. But other than that, I just don't understand this, you know, 24-hour call and something like this.
Yeah, imagine shutting down the championship at this late stage, like you say. It definitely seems like a strange call. Maybe they're bowing to the pressure, Cheddar, because there's a lot of pressure out there. There's a lot of pressure being heaped on the GAA to pull everything. I don't understand it myself. But anyways, we'll continue on. As you said, we've Laois Dublin kicking off. Go on, Cheddar.
I would like to comment about that. You know, there is some pressure. But what, you know, what is that pressure? Is it just this typical social media pressure? I think that's what it is.
It is, yeah.
Let's remind everybody here and be very, very clear about this. The first organization that was in visiting vulnerable people and old people, the first organization were GAA clubs all around the country. And, you know, let's trust GAA people to work on this, because nobody knows better that they have a duty of care to everybody here than actually GAA people. And I think also, if we want to look at this, you know, remember club championships were well run around the country with some exceptions, and there will always be exceptions. You know, whether you want to look at restaurants, whether you want to look at shops and all of these, there were exceptions. Let's not tire everybody with the one brush here. And you know, I think it's important for media people as well to separate this. Is this just the typical whingers on social media about things, or are there some serious issues? Because if they are, we need to discuss the serious issues, not just a rant like that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I couldn't agree more. So, like I said, Laois Dublin is on Sky, and that's on Saturday night. Then we have Clare Limerick on RT on Sunday. Clare Limerick is doubling up as the league final. John Kiely has said, haven't really thought very much about the league final. It's the furthest thing from my mind at the moment. It kind of puts the league and the championship into perspective, where the thoughts are. What's your idea of it doubling up?
It's an extraordinary year, Woolly.
Yeah.
Well, nothing that was originally planned in any walk of life in Ireland in the last 12 months turned out, regardless of how good planning that was. Nothing has turned out the way it is, and nothing will be perfect either. The counties you would feel most about are probably the counties that missed out on the quarterfinal, semifinals of this competition, and in preparation then for a championship. But look, you know, are there that many counties? And I suppose the other thing is that the current lockdown really capsized, you know, the whole idea about finishing out the league the way it was originally planned. So I think if you look at it pragmatically, this is the best that we can do. And look, you need to take John Kiely's comments into this as well, because I'm absolutely sure at this minute that no other manager or county would be hugely interested in how they did in the league at the expense of how they're going to do in the championship. So it was going to be impossible here to fix this to everybody's satisfaction. And look, it just so happens that the two top teams double up in the first round of the Munster Championship. And I don't think anybody can have a huge amount of complaints about that, particularly the way things have run, in the next couple of weeks with the additional lockdown in place.
Yeah, you mentioned some of those clubs that maybe things got out of hand a little bit. We probably wouldn't be too concerned about Clare Limerick winning the league and the supporters going book crazy or anything like that. I suppose they can't anyway, Cheddar. Everywhere is pretty much shut down. Maybe the supporters will have to buy a few cans and an off licence and do a Zoom call to their friends or something.
And yeah, but Willie, you know, everybody, all the experts here have said this is extraordinary and we don't know how to plot a pathway through this. And the only way you can actually do that is through learnings. And I think there's been an awful lot of learnings for the GAA and for clubs. You know, we have a number of clubs that, you know, there's been enough media articles about them that may not have handled this very, very well. And it is a very, very emotional thing. You win a county final, you might not have won one in 30 or 40 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't expect this. I am absolutely certain that if any of those clubs that were involved went back next Sunday and won the very, very same championship, would they do it different? Of course they would have taken learnings from this and been more responsible. Of course they would. And I think that's the important thing. I think the important thing is to trust people here. And if then, having given the guidelines and all of that, people still decide to go against what you're doing, having all of these learnings and knowing all of these things, then it's time to take action. So I think there has been a couple of notable cases that weren't right. People put their hand up and said we were wrong and it won't happen again, and just make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, just to show how seriously the GAA have taken this, and I think they've taken it so seriously, to the point where they were actually not following public health advice to be more conservative earlier on in the summer, and I was criticising them for that. Only captains, so say Limerick are Clare win the league as it's doubled up, only the captain is going to be allowed to touch the cup. So the captain, Declan Hannan, I'm not sure who the Clare captain is this year, only the captain is allowed to lift the cup. You're not going to have a situation where everybody's coming beside each other to touch the cup. You know, obviously, if the players are casual contacts. Like, I mean, and when the cup is lifted, it's not going to be brought down onto the pitch. It's going to be left in the presentation area. Like, just such a little small thing, Cheddar. But at least, like, the GAA, I think, should be absolutely commended for the way they've handled things over the last 5, 6, 7 months, and not have this horrific pressure. And you're right, it's a social media pressure. I don't meet any of these people ever in my life. Maybe I just meet GAA people, but I don't meet the concern in my regular life that I meet when I go online.
I fully agree with this. I suppose anything that removes the risk of transmission of COVID. And obviously, in doing that, if you can allow the games to begin, but particularly the first one, anything that you can do to remove that risk, do it. And look, you know, there's been some traditional things about, you know, the cup and all of that means, and it's a very, very emotional thing. But again, it's an extraordinary year. People will comply with that. I have no doubt they will. And you know, when you put it in the context of, well, look, the game can go ahead in a safe environment if we don't do X, Y, and Z. We might have done them previously. They might be important to us and about the folklore and all of those things, but we're not going to do this year. Will everybody comply with that and be responsible? I'm absolutely certain that they will. And there, I suppose I'm just going back to the GPA. I think if they went along that route and look at all of the things that might put transmission of this at risk, and remove all of those risks, whatever they are, whether they're traditional or whether they're important for PR or anything else, take them out of there to allow the games to go ahead. I'd fully support that. And I think the Cup, you know, it would be brilliant. It's fantastic to see, you know, when you want to go back and look at Galway winning the All-Ireland and John Maxing and West Awake and all of those things. I've entered folklore that are really, really important to all of us. But this year, let's park all of those things for this year and let's stay safe and look out for one another.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a bit of confusion regarding these inter-county games going forward. Well, no confusion regarding the senior inter-county games, but the minor and under 21, the GAA fixed these fixtures, Cheddar, for this week. And as it turns out, I think this was more of a mistake from the government. It was like the government or middlemen between NPHET and the GAA. The government thought inter-county games could go ahead, whereas NPHET had said only senior inter-county games going ahead. So then we have the situation where all of the underage games have been pulled this week. You know, rightly or wrongly, I think the under 20 hurling was allowed to go ahead last night, but the rest of them are being pulled. I don't know at this stage, Cheddar. I'm just, instead of giving out, I gave out a little bit about the underage games being pulled. You know, they're sitting beside each other in school. Why can't they play outdoor games? At this point, I'm just glad that we have something. I don't know if I have the stomach to give out about it a second time.
I think this was more to do with the mix-up between medical people and government. And, you know, I suppose that's a little bit disappointing. You know, there has been mixed messages and mix-ups and, you know, particularly back in the last couple of weeks and that. And just as a society, I could think we could do with stronger and more clear-cut leadership on all of these things, at a, you know, at a crisis time for the public here. And, you know, this has happened before earlier on in the year as well, that the GA was sort of caught in the middle. You know, was there one minister saying that the championship could go ahead and somebody else said it can't? You know, that's not a GA problem as such. I do think that the GA could take the lead here on some of these things, and you have to commend them in a lot of instances that they have. Look, I think society in general, you know, the GA at the end of the day is just a microcosm of Irish society in general. I haven't heard of any country around the world or any, you know, medical organisation that, you know, that have something in place that's going to kill this virus. If that's the case, we're going to have to live with this for maybe the next year, maybe the next 3 or 4 years. And if we are, we're going to have to plan how we're going to do that. And I think the GA, you know, might look at, you know, what are the primary tasks? You know, what are they? And, you know, what are the measures that we need to do to protect all our players here? Because there's no different than they are in life. And I'd be absolutely more than happy to follow the advice of GA medical doctors on all of these issues. And I'm absolutely certain that if we did, we come out the other side as safe as if, with a chance of going ahead, as if it didn't go ahead. And I think it's no harm for GA to take a little bit of a lead on this, to be honest with you, because there certainly has been times that the politicians haven't given us clear leads on this about where we're going to go. And a little bit more, maybe a little bit more strategic thinking about what's going to happen in the next year or two if this virus is still going to be at the same level that it is in Ireland. How are we going to live our lives?
Yeah.
The GA, you know, they're the biggest organisation and sometimes maybe the most pragmatic organisation in the country. You know, let them take the lead on this, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree with that. Come here, it's a pity that the minor and under 21 wasn't called off this time last week, Cheddar. It would, because I saw a result at the weekend that I was shocked at. Offaly 218, Laois 12 points. This fancied minor team that we have been building up last week or last year, Cheddar, that all the same lads underage from the year before. I saw our own Brian Carroll bragging on Twitter, great win for the boys against a highly fancied Laois team.
Yeah, I think Brian was scoring a couple of points off of us there. All right, it was disappointing. It certainly had the makings of a very, very good team up through the ages. And I suppose, you know, the Laois and the Offaly's and the Carlos and the Westmeads and all of these counties who are, you know, working really hard to try and get up a couple of levels. Sometimes this happens for you, and it's interesting, you know, that we're talking about Offaly because. Offaly obviously won an All-Ireland in 80, but you know their real force in hurling came from them winning a couple of minor All-Irelands, and you know, in other words, developing a team or a number of underage teams and then using those teams as the platform for senior success in later years. And you know, they don't happen. You know, you look at Laois football as well, maybe 90s, early noughties, a couple of minor teams that, you know, that you could speak about yourself, Willie, you know, drove on senior performance. You know, did we maximise that? No, we didn't. But the point I'm trying to make is that it's not often in these counties that that quality of minor team comes through. And, you know, you're sort of relying on that then to do, to, you know, make as much ground as possible, build up as much confidence in hurling within the county, win as much as possible with that team, and then use that as the platform for your senior. And that's where the disappointment, I suppose, is for Laois. Now, don't take away from Offaly for a minute. I actually looked at the game, Willie, and Offaly played really well, had a really good game plan, used the ball well, protected the ball well. I think Leo O'Connor is a Limerick man that was over them, and I was impressed with the way they played and that. But, you know, yeah, we were disappointed. We were looking forward to this team making a breakthrough and then obviously using that breakthrough then to build, you know, for senior success in the next 10, 15 years.
Yeah, and did Derek McGrath do... to his talk, he was the manager, and then he wasn't the manager. He was only going to do a session or two. Did he do a few sessions with him, as it turns out?
I know. I think that Derek was really, really good with him. And, you know, I'd strongly urge Laois County Board, now that that's in place, not to lose that. I actually liked the way Laois played. They used the ball, they carried the ball. There were certainly some good things to like about it, even though the result didn't go their way. You know, you might say, you know, I just know this myself, that you might have a lot of plans last January and they were all threw up into the air by the lockdown. You know, did have a chance to come back in and, you know, for Derek to put his real stamp on that team, I would say no, he didn't. And I think the other thing, Willie, that's really important, you know, is this a crisis or is it just a setback? You know, so what happens now is the question that we should always ask. What do we do now with that particular team? And do you just let them go and drift and not harness the qualities that they have and try and have a go at it again in under 20 in a couple of years' time? That's the crucial question that Laois County Board need to be asking at the minute. That's what I would like to see happen. It certainly was a setback. And, you know, we had to put a lot of faith in this team that had shown a lot of quality. And that's genuine. That wasn't just, this was coming up through the ages. That definitely competed very, very well at the real top level against the top counties. And look, that hasn't happened in Laois in a while. So that what was there was genuine. The performance last weekend was disappointing. But I'd also have to commend Offaly. Offaly played a really good hurling.
Yeah, always coming unstuck against Offaly, Cheddar. That's the story. That's the story of our lives here. Kamir, I wanted to ask you about winter hurling because this is a very unique championship, as we know. And who's that going to suit? I'm not a hurling person, so I'm asking you about this. But immediately, Cork's chances of winning a winter All Ireland, for me, they're gone. Is that unfair, or is there certain teams that this winter championship is going to suit above others?
Well, first of all, I don't think it has any impact on Cork, will they? Not a huge impact anyway. It's they're certainly not hole below the waterline by any stretch. I think there's a number of things that impacted. By the way, I'm not going to let you away with this either, Willie. You're long enough now delivering the hurling boat to have known something. You're not going to get away with that excuse anymore that I don't know anything about hurling. I think there are... So first of all, I think good players will adjust it to any conditions. And there's evidence there in the last couple of years that is Ballyhale are a pure skill and pace team, and they've won two All-Irelands in winter hurling, and there's not a huge amount of difference. There are variables here. First of all, pitches. A number of years ago, pitches in the winter time, and I played in the time when the league actually was played in November, December, and then it was split season, in that 1 year to the start of another year, and some of the pitches were just simply weren't proper for hurling anyway. But, look at the Leinster Championship. All of the matches are in Croke Park. Best pitch in the country, has the right, has everything right about it. So the pitch, I think, is not going to be as big an issue as it might have been 20, 30 years ago. Munster a little bit different. They have some matches in different pitches around Munster, depending on the way the game goes. I think the biggest variable may very well, when you're looking at the time of the year, it's going to be weather conditions. You know, if you look at last Saturday or maybe a couple of the last couple of days there, high wind will certainly affect hurling. And there's obviously a much more likelihood of that happening this time of the year than there is in the middle of the summer. I think there's also a couple of other variables that are important and not necessarily maybe to do with the time of the year. Atmosphere or the lack of at matches might affect. I think the other thing, though, is the things that will affect most will be if a team is hit with some COVID cases in a team and they say they lose two or three players, what happens then? Because that would be a serious, serious problem for the team. I think the other issue, there's a number of other issues as well. Games are going to come fairly thick and fast. So you pick up three or four injuries, you saw there. Last week, Parik Mahoney's out. Richie English is. I think Richie English, though, might be making progress and may very well be right for some hurling. Mike Casey looks to be in difficulty. You take Limerick for the minute, Richie English and Mike Casey off that full back line. And, that's a fair hole to fill no matter what sort of subs you have.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, the lack of prep time is going to be important. And that's particularly important for teams that play with methods. They're not going to use systems that you play to a method. You might use Limerick and that. You need time to refine those things. That might be a small drawback for some teams. I think the other thing that might be important is the number of teams that have new managers in place. Shane O'Neill in Galway doesn't know his players the way he'd like to know them. Liam Cahill probably has a better chance. Brian Lowen may not know him. I think it's a bit of a drawback for them. Particularly, as I said earlier, if they're playing to a certain method in a certain system, have they two players for all of those systems? So if somebody gets injured, do I know enough about a player that he's going to be able to fulfill the role I have for him as a defensive wing forward or a roving wing forward or whatever that is? So I think there's a number of things in that might be, it might create problems for some managers.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm thinking of winter hurling with a load of rooks, maybe, and the short ball might be risky, not going into hand and slipping out of your hand. But I don't know. Maybe is a greasy ball in hurling as difficult as a greasy football?
I look, you'd prefer that it wasn't, but is it a game changer? No, I don't think it is. I think the quality of the players will adapt to anything like that. And, you know, as I said, if you would have looked at any Ballyhale game or any of the club championships in the last couple of years, you know, was the standard of hurling any better or any less? You would prefer as number hurling. And I just go back to that point. If a team is used to playing space and it wants to, you know, move, roll the ball into space, clearly it's not going to travel as fast or as far. And, you know, you need to adapt to that. So I think for most of the teams, it won't matter. I do think that, and again, look, if the evidence it isn't a club championship, there certainly is more, maybe more physicality to the game in the winter time, and maybe that's the point you're making about Cork. But I think teams will adjust to that, Willie. I think it'll balance out.
Is there any team in hurling that kind of depends on the crowd a lot more? I saw in a football context, Jason Sherlock was saying that Mayo footballers will miss playing in front of a crowd more because they depend, you know what I mean, on their supporters getting behind them. Would that be a factor, playing behind closed doors? Would the likes of, I'm thinking of Bubbles now, would he be able to get up for a game? I don't know why he's after springing to my mind. You know, would certain players go, geez, behind closed doors, this is very unusual?
No, I don't think so. First of all, management teams will have worked on this and will have allowed for this. And look, the recent club championship has shown that I was involved in Kilkenny, and it had no effect on it whatsoever. Actually, to be honest with you, the level of hurling and the quality of the hurling was absolutely top draw right throughout, and there was obviously nobody, and there were very, very, very few people in the stadiums. I think it will have no effect on it. Why don't you know these things beforehand? It'd be different if you landed into a Semple Stadium expecting over 40,000, suddenly there was nobody in it. That would be a bit of a shock to the system. People would have, you know, teams would have talked about this, would have well managed it. Some players do use that. And I probably could maybe go back to the old Waterford team of the 90s and the 90s. You know, they definitely fed off the crowd. And John and Owen and some of the players definitely fed off the crowd. And they probably performed better with that. But look, these are really top-class athletes in every sense. And, you know, sure, look, teams have got sports psychologists and all of that in. They'll have dealt with all of this, but they'll be ready for it. And that will not be a factor. I'll be amazed if it's a factor. I'm surprised that Jason mentioned this. Now, you know, Jason could be hopping balls to Mayo and all of that. You don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But I'd be amazed if the likes of Lee Keegan or any of those needed 30,000 to convince him or to motivate him to go away and win an All-Ireland. I'd be amazed if that was the case.
Yeah, I think your Waterford example was a good one, though. Like, I mean, John Milan and Dan DeMann and Ken McGrath, I don't know, they were just crowd pleasers, maybe, more than them getting it off the crowd. They definitely seemed to enjoy it. Mentioning Waterford here, Cheddar, the news this week that Pádraic Mahony is going to miss the 2020 season. It's a knee injury. Like, he's a huge loss for Waterford. There's no doubt about that, from play and from freeze. And he was flying it with Ballygunner. I'm wondering, will we finally see Maurice Shanahan back? I don't think we will. We had him on the show here, Cheddar, and he's a real gentleman about this whole thing. Said, look, it's just not going to happen for me under Liam Cahill for whatever reasons. He was in unbelievable form for his club and not one of the bigger, stronger clubs. He was on the freeze. He was brilliant on them. Liam Cahill said at the start of the year, the panel is open. He says that depends on what he actually said now, whether that changes over time depends on these players showing me something different. He's talking about Noel Connors and Maurice Shanahan. I don't want to criticise Liam Cahill. He's entitled to drop whoever he wants. But I want to ask you as a manager, is the idea that the door is always open the biggest load of horse shit ever? Or has a manager made his mind up already and he's saying this to soften the blow?
I think if he is saying it, he's been dishonest with his team, and I think the team will smell that. I think if somebody says that the door is open for you, we think you have a bit of work to do, go away, and you would need to be specific to the player. Here's what you need to do to convince me you have something to still offer this team. And that may very well be fitness things or something like that. And, you know, some managers might actually use that to reinvigorate a player and to just bloody well waken them up in that. But you've got to be, you know, just so honest about those things. And if you're saying to somebody, your performance has dipped, we think your energy levels in your hurling and your effort and your commitment to the team, and I mean commitment to the team rather than commitment to yourself, and all of these things, there may be really valid reasons for letting somebody stand down from a senior team that's really, really driving on to win an All-Ireland. But you've got to be very, very clear and very specific about the things you are saying to him. And you've also got to, you cannot generalize, and you also got to be careful that what you're saying to that player is also the same that for the rest of the panel. So, for example, if somebody, hasn't maybe reached the nutrition levels or the weight levels or something like that you're looking for, and you let them go because of that, would you leave somebody else on? Well, look, that's a complete mixed message you're giving. The honesty of teams. So if that's we don't know enough about the Waterford situation, and clearly Liam went into Waterford and wanted to make a statement about maybe what he saw as a cozy relationship in Waterford, and wanted to make that statement, and he made it. But if he made it in the context of that you need to improve and you need to prove to me in the club championship here in Waterford that you still have it to offer something to Waterford in the first round of the championship against Cork. Did Morris do that? And did Noel Connors get to a county final with Passage? And considering the quality of the player in the last couple of years, did that then say, yeah, you've done all I asked for you, and we're inviting you back onto the panel again. Bear in mind the panel got back together in the last couple of weeks. So I think you need to be incredibly careful about making those decisions and incredibly fair to everybody. And it needs to be so transparent that there's no ambiguity about that whatsoever. Because if there is, then what you try to do, you will fail in terms of trying to motivate the team and, make some statement to the team. Actually, it might actually, fall back in its face to you.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I know Stephen Bennett can take the freeze anyway. He's not as good as Padraig Matney or Maurice Shanahan. Anyways, I might have to give up on my campaign to get Maurice Shanahan back into that panel. I don't think it's going to work.
Important one is Padraig Matney is a huge loss to Waterford. He's clearly, he's a clearly incredible hurler.
Yeah.
He certainly contributes a lot to the scoreboard to Waterford. And to a large extent, the game plan works a little bit around him. And is Maurice Shanahan, for example, a direct replacement for Padraig Matney? I probably don't think that he is.
No.
But the other side of that is that, the quality of play that you do in the training, and particularly this year, because there's not going to be a huge amount of training, the quality of play in the training will depend a lot on the quality of player you have at the training. You'd have to ask if Maurice Shanahan, a couple of weeks ago, was shooting the lights out for Liz Moore and Noel Connors was anchoring Passage to a county final, would they help with the training that's going on, that's needed for this championship? Bear in mind that it's only going to be for a couple of weeks. There are certainly serious questions that you would have to ask. But I'll wrap all of this up. Liam clearly, knew what he wanted to do here. But you do need to be very, very careful with those type of statements.
Yeah. Okay. Come here. I want to ask you about these yellow slitters. So there was a bit of a hullabaloo about these this time last week. So they're going to be using yellow slitters in the championship. And Owen Murphy tweeted, we were talking about this last week. He says, lovely. Well, I'll need 500 hurls now to put those rocks around. And Derek McGrath kind of thought, he said, I was lucky enough to see a couple of teams training over the last few weeks and I didn't see one yellow slitter at any of the sessions. When it was announced yesterday, I was saying to myself that it had been rushed. I'd like to have seen it given a little bit more piloting. So the very strong likelihood is that these slitters are in and that teams won't have had too much practice with them. How do you think that will factor, or is it an overreaction from hurling people who don't like change?
I think there's a number, again, like a lot of things, Ollie, there's a number of aspects to it, and rather than just giving a knee-jerk reaction to it, look, it has been traditional for a long time, I think, is this a critical issue at this? I think I have a different view on this, Ollie, to be honest with you. I think, is it a critical issue at this minute? And I don't think it is. And I think we've an awful lot of things to try and get right here, and to trying to throw something else into the mix and also ask teams to get right wasn't the right time to do this. I think it was poorly thought out in that sense. Where I would much rather the focus of all team management to be on keeping players safe, and that is a very, very onerous task and a very time-consuming task, rather than also saying, what, management, we're going to throw something else on you. We're going to actually throw in a yellow slitter. No, we don't.
Yeah.
That's my main probably objection. I'm sorry, the other thing I would, it clearly wasn't trialed. And, so why is there an absolute need for this at the minute? I don't think there is. Interestingly, And I was surprised that Berwick said that he, you know, that there wasn't, that team management weren't practicing with yellow slitters. I was surprised at that particular point. There was a fantastic article by John Harrington on this particular subject. I think he was discussing with Valerie Kennedy, who is the expert on this. I might be able to pronounce this right, but I think Valerie might be, is it an optometrist? Is that the word for
vision?
I made that wrong. I'll bow to the experts on it, but she's certainly an expert at sports vision and all of that. And what I was really surprised about was not necessarily the issue around the white or the yellow slitter. It was all of her views on players' vision and the research that she had carried out. I mean, this is pretty deep medical stuff here, and certainly not qualified. I'd much prefer Valerie to talk about this, Willie, on a show. But for example, the ability of players with colour blindness to be able to play at the top level is probably very, very low. And there's issues around colours, particular colours in terms of green and reds.
Yeah.
Issues, I was surprised at some of these statistics that I think 80% of the population are right eye dominant, right-handed, right-footed, or alternatively left-eye dominant, left-handed and left-footed. But amazingly, in Gaelic players, there's a sort of a cross dominance much higher in Gaelic players than there is in society in general, which I was surprised about, and I certainly would be very interested in hearing discussions around that. I was very, very surprised about, and certainly would like to hear more about her comments about, I suppose, visual ability of players. And this is really important moving forward with teams that are going to play a possession game, because your ability to understand and your spatial awareness around the field is really, really important. And here is somebody, an expert in the field, setting out the I can't think of a better reason, but maybe the technical reasons why maybe players are not able to play like this. And it would be very, very interesting to hear a little bit more discussion on that. The final point I'd make on a Woolley is that it looked like in the comments around this that a lot of the test and trial was speaking about tennis. I think tennis changed over to yellow in 72. I think Wimbledon, because they were a traditional club, didn't change over till 86. But that's a long time ago now. But all of those sports are sort of played in the daytime. And you look at the Leinster Championship. The real reason here for this is that When you're looking at the object against contrasting backgrounds in the daytime, you've got cloud and you've got cloud and colour and all of that. It's difficult to see. It's more easy to see a yellow than a white. And that's what the experts are saying, and I've no doubt that's the case. But actually, when you look at the Leinster Championship, there's three or four matches played in the nighttime. So what's it like under lights? You know, maybe it is better. I don't know. I think it would be good to explain all of that to different people. But I'll just finish with my final point on that. Is it a critical thing to be implementing at this stage when there's an awful lot of more crucial things to get right around COVID and the protection of players and all of that? And should we have postponed this till maybe next year or the year after? Well, look, we've had 130 years or whatever the hell it is of fantastic hurling. Do we need it now? I don't think we do. We should have went on. We should have said to the players, look, we're going to introduce this in a year's time or 2 years' time. We're going to trial it in the league like we do with everything else, and then we're going to introduce it and give you a chance to get used to it. I think that would be in a better way and a fairer way of actually bringing it in.
Yeah, we could definitely make a good point on that. There's more important things than changing around to yellow. I do find when I'm watching a match, if there's a big clearance, I might lose that ball in the air. Would you find that, or would you always be able to follow it?
I know you will, and to be honest with you, look, that's down a little bit to eyesight, clearly. I mean, it's a very interesting and a very serious discussion, Willie.
Yeah.
Your eyesight deteriorates as you get older. They're just facts. Mine definitely is, because I might be missing a lot of things. And if you look back, you know, how many, I know a lot of players play now with lenses and that, but, you know, going back a number of years ago, when they weren't available, you had some players that played with spectacles. I remember Paddy Broderick was a Kenny hurler going back a long time, and there's been a number of them like that. And I know towards the end of my own hurling time, to be honest with you, it took me a number of weeks and months that on the puck out, you know, I might have missed the ball in the air. I should have retired much earlier, really, would have done. And it was just the age thing. Obviously, your eyesight had deteriorated a little bit. I think the science is right here, and certainly I'm quite happy to listen to Valerie on these things. And I'd love to actually speak to her about, you know, the whole idea about players' visual ability and their ability to see things around them and all of those things was really, really interesting stuff. But I think the introduction of it this time is the wrong time when there's an awful lot more important things that needs to get done.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Before you go here, we had some technical issues, so Brian's going to look ahead to the game. I want to get your thoughts on Laois Dublin as quick as you can. Who do you fancy here?
God, I'm surprised you asked that question.
I think that's a joke at this stage, Cheddar. I've never heard you tip against Laois.
No, look, of course you're going to go against Laois. Look, we're GA people. We trust our people. We trust our management team. We trust our players. I'm obviously speaking with a Laois hat on me here. I would love to see the team building on last year and showing, you know, an awful lot of people said that Dublin were undercooked last year and they weren't ready for it and they didn't treat Laois with the respect that they deserved and so on and so on. And I'd love to see Laois going into it's in Croke Park, fantastic opportunity, and going in there and really building on last year. And I think what's really important, and I do want to see them go for the win, but, you know, I'm obviously commenting here on the show as well, Willie. What's going to be really important for a lot of teams is the actual performance, because, you know, you win, great, you move on. And, you know, this championship is also going to be a lot around momentum. Get momentum behind your team, build on it incrementally week on week, and you don't know where it will get you to. But you lose and you're going to be out again 14 days later in the first round of the All-Ireland Championship. And, you know, it's difficult to recover again at that stage. You may very well be playing, you know, you could be playing anybody or you could play a really serious heavy hitter. And so, you know, not alone is winning important, but performance is really, really important. And look, that's applied to Dublin as well. You know, Matty's under pressure here. He's changed his management team. He knows he had a serious setback last year to the development of the team. He's changed around some things and that. And, you know, he needs a win badly on Saturday night. But so do Laois. You know, we're not going to back off of that either. We're not, you know, Laois are not going up there to make numbers or anything like that.
Yeah, we'll have to make an appeal to the Laois public to stay off the streets and stay out of the towns when Laois beat Dublin on Saturday night in Croke Park, Cheddar.
I'll be saying that about everybody. You know, it's good to have, you know, a bit of fun and laugh around in these serious times as well. But they are serious times. And you know, we do need to say to everybody, first of all, Willie, we do need to thank the GAA and particularly a number of people, COVID officers, doctors, people who stood in gates and club championships for the last number of months. We owe them an awful lot of gratitude because, you know, there was enough of people whinging and crying about the club championship and it not being run properly and not being run in the right time. But it was this year, but it was only run properly due to a small number of people who were volunteers who gave up an awful lot of their time to make sure that happened. I think, you know, we just need to recognise that and be serious. And I suppose we just need to be serious with each other as well. Be responsible here to everybody. We owe a duty of care to everybody. That duty of care is to the person that you're marking as well as your own players.
Yeah, exactly. Brilliant, Cheddar. Thanks very much. We'll be back in part two, and Brian and myself are going to look ahead to the games.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat and have a shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know. It was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. It's fucking bullshit, as you see yourselves. Killing in the name
of. All right, so we'll have a look ahead to the games here. Brian, you've joined us on the phone. We've had some technical issues here, so I'm splitting the two of you up today, Brian, rather than having the two of you on at the same time. I just want to start with this issue in Offaly before we get into the games at the weekend, Brian. It's a strange one in that a player has tested positive and he was at last Tuesday's session on October the 13th, and all players and backroom team members are deemed to be close contacts. Now, that's a very strange one in that what were they all doing, sitting on this fella's knee, or how were they close contacts? I thought teammates and management were supposed to be casual contacts.
Oh, I fully agree with you, Willie. It's a very, very strange ruling by the HSE on this particular case, because it doesn't seem to be the case with all other teams that have had, people have tested positive. It seems to be only maybe the people that maybe shared a car or even in this close contacts have actually been asked to self-isolate also, and obviously, so like obviously the whole panel is in for that testing from Croke Park. They're hoping to get that done as soon as possible. So hopefully, you know, that none of the rest of them actually test positive. But regardless, they all have to self-isolate now for 14 days, backdating obviously to the 13th. So it's a bit of a mess because as far as I know, that particular player wasn't even training on that particular night. You know, he wasn't feeling well and didn't train, which obviously has its own issues too. But, he didn't train. So it seems to be quite a harsh ruling on this particular Offaly.
Right. It's definitely a weird one. So the fallout from this is they're going to miss their championship game against Kildare and they're going to have to go through the back door because that game against Kildare is going to be inside the 14 days isolation. And I'm just speculating here, Brian, but could this be a mistake by the Offaly management having maybe had fellas in a team meeting for too long so that they're being deemed close contacts instead of keeping things casual? Do you know what I mean? I'm trying to understand why this is being dealt with differently to every other county.
Honestly, it goes back to whoever has dealt with it in the HSC and their ruling on the fact of close contacts. That was a field session. To the best of my knowledge, that was a field session.
That's bizarre, then, isn't it?
It is bizarre, being honest. You know, because obviously I'm coming from a different situation here in schools, where unless you're inside the 2 meters with masks off for more than 15 minutes, you're not contact. So you know, we could have a student within our classroom setting test positive, and you know, me as a teacher wouldn't be counted as close contact. So it's a very, very strange interpretation of the ruling, but it seems to be down to the individual that dealt with it from the HSC. So it seems to be very, very harsh from an Offaly perspective. They seem to be doing everything right in terms of adhering to all the protocols. You know, a lot of the players and management, from talking to them, you know, they seem to be upset the fact that it seems to be quite a harsh ruling because they were following everything and didn't break down any of the protocols or things that they'd set in place. Look, I would hope that maybe a little bit of common sense. I don't mean those players now have been deemed as close contacts, but like there's a bit of a grey area here. Like, what's stopping our under-20s from actually representing Offaly on Saturday? You know, they had a really good win last night against Westmeath and they were missing their 3 senior players.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, what's stopping them from representing Offaly?
Because there's nothing really, I suppose. They could be reclassified as seniors.
Exactly. Like, as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't like Offaly to give away the game. You know, I don't think there should be a reason to have to give away a game. What team said it has to be those particular group of players? I understand that they're the ones that have trained for the last year or whatever. But you know what I mean? There is a wider scale thing. I would like to see that maybe our 20s could actually represent Offaly on Saturday.
Yeah. Or else they could get the COVID advisory committee to get some advice and maybe get a second opinion, because it doesn't seem to be following the same protocols as other counties. And if you're going to miss a championship match, definitely I'd be asking, you know, for a second opinion, because this is not the protocol.
No, because you look at Antrim, you know, one of the players since the game at the weekend has tested positive, you know, and they played Kerry last Saturday in the league final. And only, I think there's only one or two players have to actually self-isolate. And they're going ahead with their big game against Westmeath this weekend. So it's, you know, it really is a very, very unfortunate ruling from the HSC with this particular Offaly team.
Yeah, it definitely has. Right, we'll move on to the hurling, because geez, like, I mean, I'm talking back to the football show since last week, Brian, and we're kind of like, all right, we'll get these 2 league games out of the way. Teams can get some prep. You know, you've got the hurling, going straight from nothing into championship, and not only are Clare and Limerick playing for the quarterfinal of the Munster Championships, doubled up by a league game, is like, Jesus, they're going to be hit by a storm on Sunday after sitting under arses for seven months. Okay, not literally.
Yeah, look, most teams now have got practice matches at this stage, but look, practice matches are not the same.
No.
But you're dead right, it's literally straight into seriously high quality championship matches, or what you'd expect. You know, you've Laois and Dublin, obviously Clare and Limerick. I think John Kiely summed it up well in saying the league final is the furthest thing from their minds.
Yeah.
From that perspective.
Yeah. No, I was talking to Cheddar about that. It does show the contrast between league and championship. There is no comparison. It's the honest answer. John Kiely was also talking, they must have done a media thing during the week. He says, anyone knows anything about Limerick Clare games over the last couple of decades, probably 4 decades or more, will know you don't want to make any presumptions about anything because you could be mistaken. And you look at it, like, I'm looking at this at the point that, geez, Limerick could do a job on Clare this weekend, but Clare did a job in Limerick the year before in Ennis. Do you know what I mean? This is a neutral venue. Limerick hammered Clare at home last year. Clare hammered Limerick at home the year before. You know, Clare coming off a bad year. Who's to say Limerick are going to hammer Clare? There's just so many unknown kind of things coming into the game.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. And they both have their issues because obviously it's well documented who Clare are missing. You know, John Conn, Peter Duggan's out in Australia. You know, Colm Galvin's not playing, he's injured. And Podge Collins has opted, I think he's gone with the football as far as I know. He was come on for Clare football last weekend. So, you know, they're four big, massive blows. But then obviously Limerick have their issues too. Mike Casey and Richie English, I know, is making his way back. But, you know, they're big blows to their team.
Shane Dowling,
obviously, having retired too. So, you know, like Limerick, who would have been maybe at the outside of this championship, would have been everyone's favourites to win the championship. As you said, it's a real kind of up in the air, very hard to gauge where teams are going to be at, because one of these teams could be caught cold very, very quickly. And, you know, all the training, all the training on their own or whatever, it's just not the same when it comes to championship hurling.
Yeah. You mentioned Mike Casey and Richie English there now, right? So there's a serious weakness in the Limerick fullback line. Richie English is brilliant, and Mike Casey's a big commanding, like, he's brilliant at the role at his game as well, if we're being honest. Like, he can tie up Colin Fennelly. Like, I mean, you would imagine if Clare had Peter Duggan and Conlon, that you would think, Jesus, they can get an awful lot of joy here.
You certainly would. And look, Clare under Brian Lawton have made obviously significant changes to their style and the way that they're going about their business, and even in terms of where they're positioning their players. You know, during the league, we saw Dave McInerney play midfield alongside Tony Kelly.
Yeah.
You know, it was
that worked, no?
It did. It really worked. Now, obviously, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul because you're losing Dave McInerney out of that back line, because he's so versatile. He can play fullback, centre back, or wherever you need him to. But it's, you know, it's brilliant. We've seen Tony Kelly probably return to his best form we've seen in the last couple of years. Now, look, he's fantastic. When he's on form, he is just unmarkable. And then, obviously, the big one was David Fitzgerald was actually gone to centre-forward. Now, he got injured in the last league game, and he is offered something different up there in terms of his robustness and his aggressiveness, and he's obviously very strong and physical, and he offers something different considering, as you said, they've lost Peter Duggan and John Condon, who would have been their big men, their go-to men up there. So, Clare have, you know, they've brought something different. You would think, though, that Limerick probably have a little bit, probably maybe more experience, and maybe, you know, that they can jig around their team a little bit more. You'd maybe expect Dan Morrissey. Yeah, you'd maybe expect Dan Morrissey to fall back into full back. And, you know, Aaron Costello has been thereabouts, kind of breaking onto the team over the last year, that maybe coming into cornerback, and Barry Nash coming in at wing back. So, you know, they maybe have a little bit more settled from that perspective.
Right. Has Dan Morrissey played full back before? You seem fairly sure that's an option.
He's fallen back into full back in the league over the last number of years,
right,
as well. So, like, they haven't been afraid to try those sort of things to, over the last year or two in the league. So, you know, Dan Morrissey could work there.
Yeah, he definitely could. So, Clare, it looks like Aaron Cunningham and Aaron Shanahar might start in the full forward line alongside Shane O'Donnell. So, like, Aaron Shanahar is good in the air. Aaron Cunningham's not bad in the air either. They don't have the physicality, I suppose, of Duggan and Conlon. That's the difference.
No, they don't. But obviously, they bring something different. They have huge pace. They're very direct in their approach as well, in terms of head down, go straight for goal. And like that full forward line has serious pace. And if they get quick ball into them, you know, that they really could do damage. Now, weather conditions obviously might have a lot to play in that. You'd expect the surfaces to be pretty decent, but, you know, you're just, you know, it's winter. It's essentially winter hurling. You just don't know what weather is going to bring. The weather forecast is not great at the weekend either. You know, if Limerick, who over the last number of years have sat their half back line back a lot, and they try to nullify that space that maybe Clare will be trying to exploit. But if they get an opportunity, that full forward line has serious pace to burn.
I was talking to Cheddar in part one about winter hurling. It's interesting. Like, this is just a completely unique championship in that the championship's been played in the winter, right? And we know that's always obvious. Now, I'm ruling Cork out of winning the All-Ireland because they don't like the wind and the rain. I don't think it suits their style either, Brian. Now, having said that, in contrast, Limerick have a kind of a short game that you would imagine doesn't suit that style, but it doesn't seem to bother them during the league when it's played in similar conditions.
No, it doesn't. And like they see, I think what's brilliant about Limerick is they have a lovely mixture of style. They play the ball in short passages in around their half back line in midfield, and then obviously are able to strike long, strike to the two boys inside. It's usually two, you know, Aaron Gillan or whoever, maybe it's Peter Casey or maybe Seamus Flanagan, depending on who it is, or Graham McCatty.
Yeah.
But they generally leave two inside. And they play around that short ball, around that middle third, until they create those opportunities to strike.
Yeah.
So they are excellent at it. They're brilliant at it, and it didn't seem to matter in winter hurling. Any of the league that's gone on over the last couple of years, it never broke down. They're so good at it, and they're able to add that physicality because, in fairness, bar maybe one or two players, they have a really strong physical team as well.
So, like, I mean, you talk about that, and here's a theory on that, is that league matches generally are not hugely high intensity. You go out and play them, whatever, and a lot of that, the more established players wouldn't be at their very, very, you know, pitch, and that's okay. Championship, you are. So, like, I mean, Kilkenny against Limerick last year completely swarmed that area where Limerick like to play those few balls, get them into an area past midfield where they're giving in the lovely diagonal ball. Kilkenny never gave them a second to do that. Now I'm wondering if Clare, take a look at that Kilkenny-Limerick game, go, Jesus, look, the Kilkenny full forward line moved out to the half forward line. Their half forward line moved into midfield. They swarmed that area where Limerick are loved to play around the nice little balls. Jesus, try and do it during the winter then, Brian, when a team's swarming you and that's a wet ball and, you know, I'm not a hurler, but if you're using the same Gaelic football example, that slippy old ball that's not staying to hand.
Yeah, and you know, if you go back to one of the last games that Clare were quite good in, was probably against Wexford, and it was a similar day. It was a really strong wind. Obviously, Wexford very good at playing sharp ball, playing their dynamic sweeper as well. And Clare really swarmed them that day, particularly against the wind. And what they did, what was very noticeable that day was puck out into the wind, obviously not travelling far, maybe only going 50, 60 metres because it was a gale that wind that day down in Wexford Park. They actually loaded one side of the field and pucked it into the numbers, you know, and so just literally turned it into a battleground.
Clare did that.
Yeah, Clare did that. So it'll be interesting to see, will they bring that same tactic? And obviously, look, I think every county team, if they're playing Limerick, will try and see what Kilkenny did last year. But that's easy to have that plan. It nearly goes back to the Mike Tyson analogy where everyone has a plan until they get hit in the mouth. It's the same with Limerick. You know what I mean? They're so strong, they're so physical, they're so good on the ball. They have that confidence in what they're doing that they you would like to think that they should be able to swarm, you know, they should be able to adapt to that swarm tactic maybe that Clare or any other team is going to try and bring.
Yeah, that swarm. And I suppose on the flip side of that is that Kilkenny were able to do that on a sunny day in Croke Park with a hard ground. Would teams have the legs to do what Kilkenny did in, you know, wetter ground in the winter? Your hamstrings would be, your calves would be knotting up on 50 minutes probably.
Exactly. And the other thing we have to remember as well, like, what a comeback from Limerick in that second half. You know what I mean? Like, they almost, like, let's be honest, they should have got a draw because there was that controversial wide ball.
Yeah.
Like, that should have been a 65. You know, Limerick were coming so strong at that time, it would have been very hard to bet against them in extra time. So Limerick in their second half, and they missed a lot of opportunities in that game that they would have been disappointed with as well. So while Kilkenny were excellent that day, and their ferocity and tackling in that first half, it was still very, very hard to sustain that for 70 minutes plus.
Yeah, you mentioned David McInerney in midfield. Like, you'd imagine he'll stay in midfield because that has worked. And you imagine he'll be picking up Keane Lynch. Does Keane Lynch need somebody kind of following him around? We know traditionally midfielders just like to float around, and Keane Lynch just completely runs the game for Limerick.
He does, and I think that's needed. But I suppose on the flip side of that, you're going to probably see Limerick man mark Tony Kelly. You know, you're going to have picking him up.
Who would do that though? Would Limerick put somebody? Darragh Donovan's out.
Look, William O'Donoghue's well able to do that too. He
could do it. That's who I was thinking of. Yeah,
and he's, you know, in fairness to him, there's a bit of bowelness in him as well, so he won't be afraid to upset Tony Kelly and check his runs and do whatever that needs to be done. And that he's obviously a brilliant hurler as well, but he won't be afraid to take on that role if needed.
Yeah, is it me or is Tony Kelly love playing Limerick?
He does. Look, I think when Tony Kelly's on his game, he loves playing against everyone. he's just one of those players that when he's on form, it doesn't matter who he plays against, he's capable of getting 5-6 points of play on a normal day, let alone more. So he's just, look, for me, he's just top class.
Yeah. Do you think managers are going to be down the lines of picking teams based on club form rather than, like, I don't know from a hurling perspective, but like Desi Farrell, for example, before the Meath game in football, because at least we have that to reference, he was saying the Meath game was the first challenge game or competitive game that they've played since they got back. Like, surely, what are Brian Lowen and John Kiely picking this team on? You know, is it on last year's form? Is it on how you played with your club? Or is it how you played in the challenge game last week?
I would envisage that I'd say it'd probably come more down to the challenge matches. You know, maybe that lads that were playing well with the club and really put their hand up, might have got opportunities in those practice matches.
Right, yeah.
it was sink or swim, especially for those guys that were maybe borderline or trying to break onto the team. But generally, I'd say it'll be tried and tested if they're showing any bit of form at all. That's what you'd expect. They'll know the system, obviously, best as well. So it'd be very hard to throw a lot of green. Like, you know, you take it from a Clare perspective, very hard to throw a lot of, you know, people that are maybe just breaking onto the team into the full trust against Limerick, that are such an experienced team. And, you know, even though they could be missing a few players, that they should be able to deal with it. You know, they have such a strong panel of players.
Yeah. Who are you going for in this one?
I think you'll probably gather from what I'm saying. I think, yeah, I'd be going for Limerick. You know, I think they just have too much. Look, don't get me wrong, I don't think it's going to be all plain sailing. I was very impressed with what Clare brought during that league and where they were going under Brian Lowton. But I just think the loss of the key players that they have is going to hurt them a little bit more than Limerick.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to it? Are you doing it on RT, or are you doing the Laois Dublin game?
Laois Dublin game Saturday evening. So I'm looking forward to that too. Yeah, look, it's great. I think everyone that's associated with GA is really looking forward to seeing Championship. You know, I know, look, it was great to see Football League back last weekend, but, you know, they're not in beats Championship.
Yeah, as long as you're not doing the co-com with Milan, I'm sure he'd be jumping all over you. I doubt if you'd be a close contact of his. He's a gas man. Come here, you mentioned Laois Dublin. Like, that's the other game we want to look at. This is kicking off the year. The Hurling Championship has flown a little bit under the radar, I think, has it?
It has. I suppose there were so many league games last weekend, and there's such a fallout from COVID and all, yeah, that, you know, games dropping here now this week. There's still massive talking points, whereas obviously the Hurling, you know, it's just maybe, as you said, gone under the radar a little bit. It's probably understandable enough. You know, I almost forgot Limerick and Clare was on this weekend until I seen an ad for it on RTE, actually. So, you know, media-wise, there hasn't probably been enough about it.
Yeah, I see a bit more about this Laois Dublin game, because Dublin had a media day, and Chris Crummy was interviewed in around a few different media outlets. We all know this is a repeat of last year's game, an absolutely brilliant day for Laois Hurling, completely shocked Dublin in O'Moore Park. This one's in Croke Park at 6 o'clock. Eddie Brennan's been talking during the week as well. Laois obviously did a media day. He says, if there's any bit of character in these Dublin lads, any bit of real heart in them, we'll be getting the full brunt of that. I understand what Dublin are feeling, and our players have to know that too, in terms of their preparation and being able to meet that challenge head on. And I just thought it was, like, you know, pretty strong quote, pretty honest quote, saying if they've any bit of heart in them, we'll feel the full brunt of that. And I don't think this is any message for Dublin at all. This is a message for the Laois players, because it's like, lads, you have to understand what's coming to ye on Saturday. Don't allow Dublin have that extra motivation. Ye understand what's facing ye, and are ye capable of meeting that full force in the other direction?
Yeah, and look, I think that sums up Eddie Brennan very, very well. He's always honest. He's always blunt. There's no sugarcoating it. And I think that's exactly what he's done. It's trying to raise his own charges more, yeah, than that. It's like you have to obviously have your eyes wide open to this, you know, and you'd hope that Laois would be able to do that. You know, as you said, it was a great year, but they really do need to build on it this year, and they need to take a right cut off this game at the weekend. You know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, tactically, what will they do? You know, will they play the sweeper again or a third midfielder?
As long as it's not Paddy Purcell, says you.
I'm definitely against it. But then, look, they were doing that in the league earlier when they played Clare in the league in Ennis this year. They played Paddy Purcell as their, you know, sweeper / third midfielder as well. And look, we've had this conversation. I just don't think you're getting enough out of him. He's just too good a player. I know he's brilliant on the ball and all that, but I just love to see him in a much more advanced attacking role from a midfield perspective. He's just a class act. So it'll be interesting to see, will Laois actually do that? Because it did cause Dublin trouble last year. You know, Dublin had to be expected, but they didn't cope with it very well. And obviously Laois just were in that, you know, defiant mood, and every score was massive. And obviously it was in Port Laois, and the crowd really got behind you and you know, just built on it and kept it. And no matter what Dublin threw at Laois that day, they were just able to, you know, keep hitting fire with fire. So it'll be interesting. I think probably something that we haven't actually talked about yet is the fact that these are going to be played behind closed doors, and there's just not the same feel. It doesn't matter what sport you're watching, if it was in soccer that you're watching, or rugby or whatever. There's a total different dynamic when the crowd isn't there. And sometimes it can be actually a lot harder for maybe we'll perceive the weaker team, or the, you know, the underdog, because they can rely a lot on maybe, you know, the feel of the crowd and the surge of the crowd and the reaction of the crowd to big key moments, and that won't be there. Obviously, the players will be there and geeing each other on and management and that, but you know, there is a different feel to it.
Yeah, like, I mean, the game in Croke Park as well, you'd imagine immediately that'll favour Dublin, but I don't know, Laois had a brilliant year in Croke Park last year, beating Westmeath and got that momentum to go into the Dublin game and then put in a great performance against Tipperary. So in a way, you know, it could almost bring those players' minds back to where they were that time last, you know, this time last summer.
Yeah, exactly. And like, maybe Laois teams of maybe 2 or 3 years ago who hadn't played in Croke Park would have been fazed by that. Whereas now, as you said, they have that experience of being there last year and had, you know, obviously a great day against Westmeath and, you know, a very, very good account of themselves against Tipperary. So they won't be fazed by Croke Park. They'll actually relish it. I think if you look at the breakdown of the Laois team, they're actually quite dynamic as well. They have a lovely mixture of physicality and a bit of pace up front too. So, you know, they won't fear playing in Croke Park. They won't be fazed by this Dublin team either, because they've done it before against them. And, you know, again, it's set up for a really, really good game.
Yeah.
I would hope that Laois start well and really build on this and we see a cracker.
It's disappointing Chad Dwyer hasn't come back in onto the squad. Like, he was back for Ballinakil this year. His teammate Sean Downey, he's back in, and Picky Marr is back. So, like, I mean, I suppose there's two pluses.
Yeah, it is. Look, Charlie's situation, I say there's maybe a mixture of characters there between Eddie and Charlie. You know, Charlie's hurling wasn't probably at the pitch of what he's given over the last number of years last year. And, it, you know, he was due to go travelling.
Yeah.
When he didn't, then due to COVID, you would have thought, God, maybe he'll come back onto this panel. But obviously, I don't know whether he chose not to or he wasn't invited. But whatever way it's worked out, he's not there anyway.
And so, wait, is there an issue between Eddie and him?
Look, I don't know that for definite.
Yeah,
don't be putting words in my mouth. But you know, looking at it from the outside, I didn't see the best of Chad Dwyer last year. Do you know what I mean? Maybe the system didn't suit him, where he was the main man and the main scoring forward over the last number of years. And
he was good against Dublin that day now in Amore Park. He threw himself around brilliantly.
But see, he is brilliant. That's the other side of it. He is very, very physical. He hurls on the edge all the time. And he has a brilliant, you know, eye for goal as well. He usually can notch up 4 or 5 points. But maybe the system that they were playing maybe didn't, you know, suit them as much. Look, as I said, I'm looking at that from the outside. I could be as far out as a lighthouse with that one. But it is a pity that he's not actually back on board. You know what I mean? Because he would have been a big plus. But as you said, Picky Marr has showed brilliant form for Ballacolla in their run to the county final. So he's another man that if he shows his best form, he can do it against anyone as well.
Yeah, could be bringing Willie Hyland back as well. Eddie could be giving him a call. Well, I mentioned Sean Moran at forwards with you already, Brian. My memory is pretty much gone. It's hard to know what to say about Dublin and what they can change. And, you know, we haven't seen enough from them to know, you know, where they're back at this year.
Yeah, it's very hard. And they're one team I haven't heard much about either in terms of their practice matches or how they're going. You know, Chris Cummings kind of hinted that maybe he might be playing a little bit further up the field as well. So that'll be an interesting dynamic. Even when he is playing wing back, he's forever up the field. I'd hate to be marking him, because maybe you might get a few scores yourself, but you might be spending a good bit of time chasing him too.
Yeah. Was that something? Did they do a bit of a Davy Fitzgerald on him in the early league games, playing him centre forward? Is that just ringing my mind here?
Yeah, he did. You're dead right, because he played centre forward against Carlo anyway, a game that I covered. So, you know, again, maybe looking like that David Fitzgerald thing with Clare, looking for something, a different dynamic. But then will that be Sean Moran they'll actually go to with that centre forward role? So, you know, it's interesting. They have options, obviously, because they're all good hurlers and can play anywhere. But again, I think Dublin need to get more out of their really big players. You know, the likes of Danny Stuckcliffe now, who is obviously excellent too. But he needs a bigger return from play. And it'll be interesting to see how the cooler players can actually maybe really get the best out of them from a Dublin perspective. Like, you know, they walked, more or less walked that Dublin Championship again. They're a brilliant team. They obviously know Matty Kenny really well. He knows them really well. But I think for Dublin to really push forward, I think those cooler players need to come to the fore and really excel for them, because they are, you know, up there with one of the best teams in the country still. You know, obviously they've won the All-Ireland, you know, twice, but they're an excellent club team, and you'd love to see those players really transfer that club form into the county, because they're, as I said, they're as good as what's around.
Yeah, you mentioned Danny Sutcliffe there. He did some media and he was talking about, I have a bee in my bonnet about this, Brian, and I'm sure I've talked about it before, but I can't be sure if it was the football show or the hurling show, but like, he was like, revenge isn't on our minds against Laois. I was like, Jesus, like, I mean, what better motivation is there for revenge to, you know, redo a result that you let yourselves down in? Like, Matty Kenny blamed attitude last year. Our mindset wasn't right for some reason. I didn't have the guy's mentality right for the battle. You know, he's kind of talking about that after the game last year. Danny Sutcliffe is saying, look, it's just another game. We don't want to talk about revenge. I don't know. If a manager made a speech talking about revenge, I'd be a hell of a lot more going than I would be if they're telling me that this is just another game that we have to win.
Yeah, like I wonder, and obviously we're running some eyes in here, I wonder, is that more this sports psychology maybe?
Yeah, the emotion. You're not meant to go on emotion. That's the whole thing about it.
The process and all that. Sorry now, folks. I don't care what sport it is. At certain times, you have to rely on emotion and you have to get up. Sure, look at Klopp. Like, don't tell me that Liverpool don't play with emotion. You know what I mean? You get, sometimes it just needs to be done. You just really, you find a cause and you go after it. We discussed this already, Willie. How many teams have we heard, the best in each county? We've heard Six Mile Bridge go on about it. We've heard the Pearcy go on about it. We heard Ballyhale.
Oh, yeah.
Cause they've all said, oh, you've written us off and we'll show you. And we're like, no, you're the best team in the county. Like, no one's writing you off. But if that's what you choose to believe. So emotion still plays a huge part. So it's strange comments. Look, it probably ties itself, as I said, into that sports psychology rubbish.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's kind of, like Napiershig and Ballyhale. Like, amazingly, Ballyhale drew on the exact same, you know, motivation as Napiershig. We were written off or whatever. Like, I mean, it's just, like, it's incredible that these brilliant teams, maybe it's these brilliant teams needed that edit thing. Like, Kilkenny down through the years might have had to throw in an extra thing because it's too hard. Maybe it's not hard to motivate great players, but you need to find something different. But, like, with Dublin, you've just lost to them last year. You know, like, how would you not draw on that? Like, think of the, I'd be telling them, think of the pitch invasion. Think of standing out in the field as they ran past you. I don't know, maybe I've never managed, but I'd be talking about all that stuff.
Oh, 100%. You would think the players would be talking about it. I think, yeah, they're very strange comments, being honest. I know where he's coming from, but obviously, if I know any team I'd be involved with, definitely you'd be drawn on them, as you said, to find that extra bit of a motivation to try and get you over the line, because do whatever it takes. Sure, look, David Fisher is a brilliant one for two, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's the opposite. He goes on that maybe over the... the truth is probably somewhere in between the middle of the spectrum somewhere. There's Joe McDonagh Cup this weekend as well, Brian, and Kerry are playing Meath. We'd imagine Kerry would win that. Even they went down in a great game against Antrim last weekend, and I was praising the Sunday game last Sunday night for their football highlights, and I was being attacked by the hurling people for saying it's a joke, brilliant league final, and it wasn't even shown. You're a football man, and I was getting this back. So definitely have to reference the league final, Division 2 league final last week in Ennis.
Yeah, and no, that was played in Tullamore, actually.
In Tullamore.
Yeah, look, big. No matter who won that, it was going to be a massive win because we're back to Division 1 hurling for both of them. So, you know, massive win for Antrim. They'll be really buoyed by that. And, like, they needed maybe that win going into this game against Westmeath at the weekend too, because that's arguably nearly the fixture of the Joe McDonagh, because it's a huge game.
Antrim, you know, are in bother though. Antrim have some COVID issues.
They do, and look, I talked about this. You know, it's interesting the fact that, you know, the who's available to them now and who's not available to them. So, like, if they're missing a couple of key players, that really could help Westmeath. And look, obviously Westmeath obviously bringing in Davy Glennon too. So, you know, they'll be quite confident. Remember, they got to that Joe McDonagh final last year. Now they got annihilated by Cork the week after, but Cork are capable of doing that to them.
During the summer.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Cork hit 40 points that day. I thought I'd never see the day. You know what I mean? 141, I think, they scored that day or something. It was just unbelievable.
Yeah, well, I'd just like to say to you that Mayo footballers scored 217.5 last Sunday. So look, listen, all these high scores aren't just a small ball, you know.
What's rare is wonderful in football.
Exactly. Come here, you mentioned David Glennon transfer. I had him on the show here last week, and I have to admit, like, from a fellow who was on and off panels, and when you'd be off the panel, you'd be hoping that the manager is gone at the end of the year, or else you're screwed the following year. And whatever way it always worked with me, generally when I dropped off a panel, there was a new manager the next year and I got back in. But you look at David Glennon, Shane O'Neill didn't fancy him. He's only 29. And he's like, geez, I'd love to play a few more years. And he's gone to Westmead. I have no moral issues with this whatsoever. What's your take on it?
From an individual perspective, I think he's dead right. Look, Sir Galway have, you know, basically closed the door on him. They say otherwise, but they basically have. And he's looking at an opportunity from his perspective. He doesn't feel he's... because obviously he's playing for Westmead, he doesn't feel he's going against Galway, and it's prolonging his inter-county career. So from his perspective, it's a no-brainer. If he's able to do the logistical travelling and able to fit in the inter-county scene and do that, I don't see an issue with it. I probably, from an inter-county perspective, I'm not so sure of the ruling, because like this was kind of brought in a while ago, maybe for players that maybe like, you know, maybe for developing counties, particularly in you know, like Westmead are not a developing county. I know they're outside the top tier, but they're a very established inter-county hurling team. Like, you know, they got to the Joe McDonagh last year. They were very, very close to getting up to playing in the Leinster Championship proper. So, like, I'm not so sure how...
His mother's from Westmead, so he does qualify. Yeah, like, I mean...
I know he does qualify. I'm not, and technically he's 100% entitled to. So I'm just saying I'm not really sure. I've always kind of felt a little bit iffy about, you know, players going playing with other counties. I know I always felt, I'd be lying if I said otherwise. You know, I always felt the same about Dublin, seeing Ryan Dwyer go up and maybe Darragh O'Connell go up and play up there as well. You know what I mean? So it's just the way I feel. Maybe it's very... very closed mindset from my perspective, because I'm thinking, you know, if I was playing for Offaly and they're getting improved by players going playing for them, it makes our task even harder. Maybe it's the wrong mindset altogether, but I'm being very honest in what I feel.
Yeah, maybe that's clouding your judgment. I suppose if it's I didn't actually see it from that point of view with me getting David Glennon like that. I don't know. It's a situation where, like, I suppose when you see a team like Westmead getting a good transfer like that, I wouldn't really have an issue with that. Whereas if I saw, for example, you know, Tipperary getting someone and making them even stronger, you might have more of an issue with it. So maybe you're right. Maybe there's more of a general point about these transfers than the way I'm thinking. I didn't get predictions off you. Are you going Dublin or Laois?
I tell you what, I'm going to go with Dublin. Surely because there has to be a bounce in them. There just has to be. I just don't see how there couldn't be. And if they don't win this, they've been bandied about as, you know, pretenders to the throne in terms of trying to win Leinster or win All-Ireland. If they don't win this, they can forget about that.
Right, okay. Kerry Meade, Antrim Westmead. Are you going Kerry, Westmead here?
Well, Kerry against Meade. Again, Meade are, you know, they're not a bad team. They have some really, really good hurlers, but Kerry are a very experienced team at this level. They've been, again, knocking on the door. Either it's Division 2 hurling or... Joe McDonagh, very, very close to making that breakthrough too. So I'll go with Kerry in that one. Antrim Westmead, God, I think the big win for Antrim last weekend will really, really help them. They have got an opportunity to play as well, which really sets them up for this game. But it is interesting to see how badly affected they're going to be by COVID. I think if Antrim have more or less their full deck, I think they will do it, just simply because of that win last weekend. If they're badly affected, you'd expect Westmead to overturn them.
Right. Okay, brilliant stuff, Brian. Thanks very much. We'll be back on Monday and we'll review these games. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Let it go. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.